All right, as we look at tonight's material, if you look across the page, thinking about when God is with us, the theme of this lesson is God will be with us when we suffer as a Christian. So we dealt with part of this material a week ago. Tonight we want to continue. As I said, we start with the book of John, and we'll get three helpers lined up. The first one for John 17, verse 14. After that, we'll look at John 16, 2, and then following that, Acts chapter 22, verse 22. Who wants to head over to John 17, 14 and read that in just a minute? All right, Margaret. And then after that, we'll slip back to John 16 and look at the second verse, John 16, 2. All right, Tracy. And then from the book of Acts, Acts chapter 22, verse 22. Who wants to take care of that one? Acts 22, verse 22. All right. Betty, is that okay with you? Acts 22, verse 22? Okay. John 17, 14. Margaret, if you're ready. John 17, verse 14. Okay, a blank is, Jesus said, I've given them thy word, and the world does what? It has hated them. And then he gives a reason, because they're not of the world. If we look at our society today, if people do not fit in, if they refuse to conform, they're made fun of, they're mocked, maybe to the point of where there is not just physical abuse, there's actually verbal abuse, and those kinds of things. And Jesus knew that that was going to be true for his people. They would enter into the world. They would not be going along with what the world's ideas were. And the Lord says, you're not going to fare very well. As I was thinking about this, this may have come up late Monday night. We had a preacher's meeting. Ray went down as well. Maybe it came up yesterday. I'm not sure which day it was. There's been a lot of stuff the last couple of days. But one of the questions we raised at the preacher's meeting on Monday was, what happens if you are in a school situation? And I know that bullying has changed a good bit over the years, but it's still been a problem in recent years. And, you know, if you've got people that hate you, people are trying to bully you. At that meeting, we raised the question, if you were the parent, how would you respond to a situation where your child's being bullied? Well, there are different answers given. I'm in kind of the, I guess maybe because of my upbringing, I'm in favor of just socking him once and getting it over with. That, I don't think, was how everybody would have responded to it. But after I got home, read about a young fellow from Canada, and really kind of an interesting story. He was bullied, and his solution to it was to become a doorman. At the high school, there was a door that people needed to pass through, and I'm guessing there were multiple doors that they needed to get through. But he decided that he was going to station himself at least this one door on a regular basis, maybe other doors. And as people began to arrive at school, go through the door, he was friendly. Hi, how are you? Hope you have a good day. And I'm pretty sure I would, because of how human nature is, I'm suspecting that he probably had some people mock him and ridicule him for a while. However, as time progressed, he got to the point where he got the respect of people, picked up, I think, some girls. And when, things began to change, when he started to get grief, people actually stood up and defended him. So whereas you had for a while the majority picking on him, now the majority becomes friendly to him. So it's interesting how that kind of thing works. But the people there felt like, well, now you're part of our group. Not necessarily because of this or that, but, you know, we've got that door connection in common. So we're going to support you and help you, and we're going to put you on the inside of things rather than the outside of things. So I thought that was kind of interesting. In lieu of that meeting on Monday. But the Lord said, you're not going to be with the world, so they will hate you. Okay, John 16, verse 2. Let's look at that next.
They shall put you out of the synagogues, yea, the time cometh, that whosoever killeth you, think that he doth God's service.
Okay, keep that verse handy, if you would, because I'll ask you to read verse 3 in just a second as well. Here we learn that the disciples would be put out of the, where? Synagogues, a place where the Jewish people worshipped. They learned various things as well. That was an important location. And that the time would come when whosoever did what? Kill them would think that they were offering service to God. Then, Tracy, let's get a reason for this. Verse 3.
And these things will they do unto you because they have not known the Father nor me.
Okay. When he says, you've not known the Father nor or me, what word would we use there today to kind of sum it up? They were He says, you've not known the Father, you've not known me. Well, okay, I'm going to use the word ignorance, but you do have that unbelief, and that's the basis for it. People just didn't understand. Today, do you think that we've got that same issue? You know, when we think about the illustration I gave, that can go back to ignorance. They really didn't know the guy. There was just, some mindless hatred that was directed to him. People got to know him a little bit better, and things worked out. That's one of the devil's greatest tools in our day and time, is ignorance. Well, I think the willfulness part is a big factor. If a person is really seeking and searching, it shouldn't take too long for them to find the truth.
Well, even if they're not seeking and searching for the actual truth as we believe it, if they're seeking and searching, they're going to find that truth, but they still don't accept it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not ignorance. That's more...
It's rejection.
Willful, I don't want to believe that.
Yes, and that is right. And I'm... going to come back to that thought, but Doug, we'll see what you have to say first.
It's like when you talk to some people, the younger kids today, you bring up somebody like Welcome Back, Potter. Always like, it's ignorance because they did never seen it. So the same way goes, I think, with the scriptures, is that they're ignorant because they're not looking for the truth, but they're ignorant because the parents never taught them anything, or someone that they hung around with never pursued that. So it's you can say it's blatant, but they never knew. There are truly people that are ignorant. And we can't use the same thing with the homosexuals where they say, well, you're ignorant, you don't understand, but that's not the case. This case is that people just never have it in their lives, and so they're ignorant of it.
Yeah,
they know nothing about it. When we were kids, when I was a kid, I was raised in the church. I was in it doing whatever I was doing. I didn't care about Bible or scripture or anything that had to do with God. I was doing my own thing. I was ignorant. But I wasn't stupid. Yeah. I just had no desire to follow that.
Yeah. Ignorance is bliss.
Right. Ignorance was bliss.
Is the way that a lot of people think. I've seen this. I continue to see this. And just about anybody else has done some work on the web on a reasonably large scale has seen this as well. If you put out some generic posts, for example, be a kind person, folks will eat that up. But if you put out some information as far as some doctrinal information, what does the Bible say about the church? What does the Bible say about conversion? Anybody that has done a reasonable amount of work on the web will, number one, be able to track some figures. And when they put out that post, they'll see the next time that they check that set of figures as far as what their web traffic is, they've dropped some subscribers. Now, it's possible. For example, let's say that you have 5,000 subscribers, you put out a doctrinal post and you lose 50. And from the time that you put out the post to the time you check out those facts and figures, maybe you've got a period of 10 hours. Put it out late at night, so apparently people are reading that either late in the evening, early in the morning, 50 people drop off. I guess it's possible that a person could study out that point from the late hours of the night to the early hours of the next day. But when you have that happening, like I say, with 50 people, I think the chance of that, as far as them studying that out, is very, very slight between that time period. What I suspect, and I would be willing to bet money on it if I were a betting person, is that they saw that it didn't line up with their belief system, and bang, we're going to unsubscribe from the list. We're not going to get that material. And like I say, that happens to anybody that's trying to put out some doctrinal material on the web. So there again, it is the blissful ignorance. You don't want to hear anything that goes contrary to... And some people that do that on the web, they get threatened. Not that they're going to come over and somebody's going to do some bodily damage. Why, if you post that again, I'm not going to subscribe? Well, okay. I mean, that's your choice. We're not forcing material. We're putting it out there. But you do have that to a big degree in our day and time, where people, they just have that resistance to anything. They're not really willing to study. It's just, I have my convictions, I'm comfortable with these, and that's it. So if you're on the blog for the Christian women, you're going to likely see an article tomorrow which says essentially that a husband and wife were studying with this lady, and she was under the belief that a halo appeared around her head and she was saved. Well, they tried to say, let's go back and see what the Bible says. And she wasn't convinced by the scriptures. It was, look, I believe that there was this halo, I believe I was saved, and that is the end of it. So it's sad, but it's very common.
It's interesting that this point came up right now, because Betty and I were talking about it actually before we started Bible study tonight. And she was relating about how she had found when the people that are on the World Bible Study reach certain points in the study, which is certain facts, as you were saying, they just stop. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, I don't want to go any further. I don't want you rocking my boat. Mm-hmm. Stay away from it. And so they just drop it.
Yeah, and like I said, ignorance is a big problem. Satan uses it very, very effectively. There are different forms of it, but sometimes people just want to keep the wool pulled over their eyes. They are just not interested in the truth because it will rock the boat. But John 16:3 reminds us that ignorance is a significant problem. Anybody else? Okay, we're ready for the book of Acts. This is point number 5, Acts 22, verse 22. From this verse, tell what the adversaries thought of Paul. He's not fit to live. Well, what would you infer from that? If you're not fit to live, then that means...
we're going to kill you.
Yeah, that means you need to die, and likely at our hands. Are there some people that still have that kind of mentality today? If anybody needs a copy of the book, I think we've got some back by Steve. You're not fit to live, you need to die. Anybody reason like that in today's world? Yeah, you think about ISIS and some of the other people, Al-Qaeda, groups like that. You know, if you're not going to follow our way, then you are not fit to live. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that the people that talk about, you know, tolerance and love, oftentimes they are the least tolerant, they are the least loving. I've said a few times over the years, maybe 3 or 4, but I'll tie it in with this point as well. When you hear people like that, it goes back to same-sex relationships that Doug was talking about earlier. There are 3 stages to it. And this is really a good summation of liberalism and a lot of the false philosophies. They come along to a group of people, in this case, who are trying to one degree or another follow the scriptures, and they start out by saying, just tolerate us. We're not asking to be equal. You just tolerate us. Well, okay, people want to be nice and kind and friendly, so we'll tolerate you. And some time passes. And after a certain point, toleration is no longer good enough. Why, if we're not equal, it's not fair. So now you have to move from toleration to equality. And that's what we see in our society with some issues. And then after a little longer passes, what happens? You've gone from toleration to equality. Now you move up to superiority. It's got to be my way. We don't have room for you. And if you're not going to accept us and let us lead, then we got to do away with you. We got to shut you down. And, you know, that's exactly what we see in our world. So when you think about adversaries and the kinds of things that we're talking about, when I suffer for being a Christian, this kind of stuff has been going on for a long time, and we have many examples of it. All right, before we pick up with point 6, Acts 23:12, anything that you can...
Doug? On the same subject, it's like the living together before you get married. That's kind of been put under the rug because the homosexuality has come up, and they're like, well, that's okay if you live together before you're married, but don't become homosexual. So now that went through that same deal.
It did.
That it was
tolerated.
Not okay, and it was tolerated. And then now it's just accepted, and they leave it as just being married. And
yeah, it's almost superior. Because, you know, you are free.
You're not bound to a husband or wife.
Right. You're free from all the legal entanglements that may come with marriage. So, and if you figure out it doesn't work, then go ahead and dump the person unless it's a common law marriage situation.
But all the mental, with all of it, is being, well, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
At least they're not homosexual. Mm-hmm. Because that's what we start doing. Well, at least they're not doing this. It's to say a sin is a sin is a sin. It's not the at least. It's an attitude we carry.
It is. Okay, let's line up three more helpers. Acts 23:12. Who wants to take care of that one? Steve, and after that we'll look at Acts 8:36. Who wants to be responsible for that one? All right. Thought there was a hand or two. I think there was some stretching. So Stan, Acts 8:36, and then we'll look at 1 Corinthians 4:13. Who wants that one? 1 Corinthians 4, Jenny, verse 13. We start with Acts 23:12.
And when it was day, some of the Jews banded together and bound themselves under an oath, saying that they would neither eat nor drink till they had killed Paul.
Okay. And if you look at verse 13, if you're there, how many people were involved with this?
40.
All right, you've got about 40 people, and what were they saying? We're not going to eat, we're not going to drink until this guy is out of our hair. So when you think about the kind of hatred that Jesus is describing, when you look at the kind of hatred for God's people that we see today, it's not always on the mild side. I mean, there are people, they just become so upset at the things associated with Christianity. I mean, they just want to get rid of you. But you know, there's some good news. Are you still there, Steve? Let's back up to verse 11, Acts 23.
But the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, "Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so ye must also bear witness at Rome."
Okay, so you've got more than 40 people, you've got about 40 people that want to destroy Paul. Things are not looking good, but when you look back at verse 11, what's God say? Yeah, I'm with you. So I know that there are some bad people out there and they've got some evil intentions, but Paul, you hang in there because I'm going to be with you. I'll get you through this. Everything will be okay. So it might be hairy at times, but stay the course. And that is great advice for us.
Just out of curiosity, how long from the time this vow was made till Paul died?
You've got...
Probably 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I'm thinking... Yeah, so... Well, you know, people, we know that they can keep grudges for a long time.
Yeah, I know, but if you don't eat or drink, you're going to be dead.
Well, yeah, I think that probably was more on the exaggeration side of things, unless they, you know, were able to carry out their plot instantaneously. But, yeah, they did eat or drink again, or they didn't make it. But
to begin with, it was almost the same. He was going to crucify those that were Christians.
Yes, yeah. So... Yeah, I think Ray would be right in the estimating category when you look at the end of Acts chapter 28, and then the letters, of his life, you know, poured out like a drink offering and so forth. So, but they were steamed, no doubt about it. Anybody else? Okay, let's pick up that next reference. Stan, I think this is yours, Romans 8:36.
As it is written, "For thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter."
Okay, that translation does a good job. Literally, it is killed all day. I find that to be kind of an interesting statement, because here you have God. It's almost like God is standing by as his people are killed. One's knocked off, two's knocked off, three's knocked off, four's knocked off. So you see God sometimes not interfering with things, if you will, as we might expect, or maybe sometimes as we might hope. But yet, as we picked up from Acts chapter 23, you know, he's got a plan, and sometimes that's just not all that visible to us. But in this particular case, you've got several people described as being harassed, hurt, to the point of their lives actually being taken, and yet God says you stay the course, you stick with the path. 1 Corinthians 4:13, Jenny. Okay, let's fill in our blanks and then talk about it for a minute. Being what?
Defamed.
All right, defamed, we entreat. We're made as the filth of the world. We are the offscouring of all things under this day. I used this passage not long ago. You may or may not remember how it was used, but I talked about how at Thanksgiving time, we fired up our smoker and made a turkey and a ham, and we've got that drip pan. And that drip pan, it was just filthy. It's black. You've got nasty stuff on there that is, it's just like almost searing it onto the pan. You've got grease in that pan. And I mean, it's just icky. It's just nasty. And if you've ever had a pan like that, where you take it out of the oven or you take it out of the roaster, you take it out of the smoker, those kinds of things. That's what Paul's saying. That's the imagery here, as he wrote to the Corinthians. He said, people look at us and they just treat us as the filth. They treat us as garbage. They treat us like a dump, even though we're trying to help them. So if we're dealing with people at times and we feel like we're treated very badly, that there's no regard for us, people just try to step on us and trample us and do all kinds of bad things to us, then we're not going to be the first ones. And Jesus had promised that. So when we suffer as a Christian, the title of our lesson, bear in mind that that is part of the package. Anything you want to add or ask before we pick up with the next few references? Okay, from point 9, we have a reference in Thessalonians, 1 Thessalonians 2:2. Who wants to take care of that one for us? Tracy? After that, we will look at Acts chapter 16, 22 to 24. Who wants to take that one for us? Brian? Acts 16, 22 to 24. And then from the book of Hebrews, chapter 10, verses 32 and 33. Hebrews 10, 32 and 33. Jenny, back to you. Hebrews 10, 32 and 33. Let's start with 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 2. Okay, our blanks. He says, first of all, we were treated how? We were treated shamefully. And he said to these Christians, you know this, you're aware of this. At Philippi, we were bold. Okay, I was thinking that's the word that we want there. Okay, we were bold in our God. We were confident, even though we faced some problems, to speak unto you the gospel of God with how much contention? A lot. And let's get some information about that from Acts 16, verses 22 and 24.
Then the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates ripped off their clothes and commanded to beat them. And when they had laid many stripes upon them, they cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. Who, having received such a charge, thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks.
Okay. From these verses, tell how Paul and his companion were shamefully treated. We should have at least three things there. They were
beaten,
and the beating involved, all right, stripes that were many or numerous. Number two, what else happened to them? All right, put into the inner prison, and stocks were used. That would be the third item that I had. Anybody have anything beyond those three things?
They would have been shamed by them renting their clothes. That's showing that you disgust me. That's what the Jews did. They threw up their sackcloth and ashes and rent their clothes when somebody was out of line in their minds.
Yeah, for that morning, you find that kind of demonstration.
You kind of find it interesting, too, a short thing, is that they thought they got rid of the guy that was causing trouble when they killed Jesus. Now when Paul and all these apostles come, now they're like, great, we got 12 more of these characters.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like finding a rat in a house. You're unhappy with one. Exterminator comes out and says, I've got some bad news for you. You know, you've got a whole household. And then all of a sudden it's, oh boy, what do we do? But that was kind of it. You know, they thought, well, we've just got one mouse, and then all of a sudden we've got a whole colony. And that was bad news. Okay, Hebrews 10, verses 32 and 33. Jenny, is that yours? Okay.
Which verses?
Hebrews 10, 32 and 33. Let's fill in our blanks. He talks about the former days. What do you think those days were for these people? The former days. The earlier times. When would that have been for these Christians?
When they were of the world.
Oh, okay. Early days of conversion. They were making that transition from one way of life to a new way of life. And he says, during that time, you know, when you're leaving the old life, embracing the new, during those early days of Christianity, you endured, you experienced a great fight, and the fight involved afflictions. So there were, we may not know everything that happened to these Christians or everything that was going on, but in the early days, it was a great, great struggle. There were some really bad things taking place. He says, partly, you were made a gazing stock. You know, when will people, start rubbernecking if they're in the vehicle? Or if they are not in the vehicle, what kinds of things will make them stare? Keeping in mind Hebrews 10, 32 and 33. What do people stare at?
People that are being mistreated.
Okay, there's one.
Tragic circumstance.
Okay, we had a group there when Brad was having his attack. Remember? A week ago?
Yeah.
You know, people, their attention is drawn to folks that are going through some kind of problem. What about when a fight breaks out? People say, we're going to, head home and not watch the fight. What happens? Two guys start going at it, two women start going at it, and they're just a couple friends, but all of a sudden, alright, they form a crowd and they egg it on. Get him, hit him, slap her, those kinds of things. Pull her hair. Yeah, go, great. Jab her in the eye. It's kind of interesting that people are interested in that kind of activity. Well, if you've got Christians that are being persecuted, do you think people came out to watch that kind of stuff?
Absolutely.
There were people at Jesus' crucifixion, wasn't there? Now, maybe part of that was because of who the Lord was. But you think about some of the images in the Old West. Time to hang somebody. Got the horse thief. Yeah. And, even the kids. Now, sometimes you'll see graphics and how realistic that is. I guess we're not going to be assured of that based on the information we have tonight. But it is a big deal. People are coming out to watch that and so forth. Steve?
I think the Romans throwing Christians and slaves to the lions.
Oh, yeah. Yes, the Colosseums. The Colosseums were actually filled for that kind of quote-unquote entertainment. And you've got the roar of the crowd. You've got the cheering. As Tracy said, they're egging them on. Yeah, bring out the lions. Get the hungry lions, let's see them ripped up, limb to limb, those kinds of things. So people are funny in that kind of... I mean, if we were on the opposite end of it, it wouldn't be so interesting. But if it's happening to somebody else, there's almost a grotesque fascination with it. So it's not surprising that these people went through that kind of thing. And Paul says you were gazing stock. People were looking at you. And then he says what else? By both reproaches and afflictions, still talking about their hardships, and partly while she became companions of them that were so used. So you've got some things in there like ridicule, and Paul reminds them that you suffered, and now because of where you are as a Christian, thinking about turning away from Christ, you need to go back and remember how you were willing to suffer and continue to do that as you live the Christian life. Additional thoughts here before we pick up with the next major point. Okay. From there it says, from the foregoing scriptures, one can easily see that being a Christian in the early days of Christianity was no easy task. These people suffered. They lost their homes. They lost their jobs sometimes. Families were torn apart. People were put in prison. Sometimes they were killed in brutal ways. It was a very, very painful way to live for many of God's people. Then he says in bold, how would today's convictions measure up to those of the first century saints? What do you think the answer to that would be? How would we do?
A little ridicule to begin with, kind of like that, what you started out with, a boy standing at the door or something. Ridicule to begin with, and then eventually they tolerate.
Yes, there. I think you'd probably see gradual as far as a progression of that. And how do you think Christians would respond to that? Initially, think most people would stay on board? A little harassment, some bad things, some unkind things said. I suspect that probably would be true for the majority. But what about as things progressed, became more intense? The modern church. You think we do as well as far as keeping the faith? Better? About the same? I'm not sure we do better.
I think our life has been so soft in this life that most of us haven't gone through a really tough time in life. Yes, you talk about you might have collected cans. How many of us really had to start to go looking for food and really go through some really, really hard times? Like, their whole life was hard in those days. We would have a hard time. I think there's a whole lot more people now than there was.
Yeah, and I think we'd see some differences along the lines of generations. If you take Ray's generation, I think you'd probably see a greater degree of faithfulness for various reasons. I think if you took our generation, you'd see less, but you'd still see some people that are committed. And the younger you get, at least this is my thinking, I may be very wrong, but the younger you get, well, I mean, you just have to look at it now. Let's turn that around a little bit. When you look at the people who are really committed, you've got that older generation that, for the most part, seems still pretty solid. Then you've got my generation where, you know, some things have started to drop off. And then you get into the younger generation and, you know, just getting them in the door is a challenge. So if persecution arose, like I say, I suspect we would see some trends there. You know, how well the young did first century, I'm not sure. But it would definitely be a challenge for us, and maybe that's one day what we're going to face. Then he asked, too, would we just call it quits if faced with those trials? Well, some surely would. And yet the Lord asked questions like, what shall a man give in exchange for a soul? So even though the world might say, look, you know, worship the beast, to use the analogy from the book of Revelation, God says, don't make that choice, because that's going to cost you your eternal spirit. Anything you want to add or ask, Stan?
Well, this is just kind of an extension of our earlier discussion. Today, when people are studying and they reach a certain point where they become knowledgeable enough to know that there's something to do, and they call it quits right there. I don't want to go any further. I don't want to know. I don't want to be faced with that decision. Well, you can move that on down the line. You can take the person who is more educated, more knowledgeable, does know what to do, but if you put a little stress on them in one way or the other, then there are certain points at which they will finally say, no, I don't want to go any further with it. We'll stop right here. So it's just how far we get pushed.
Yeah, it is. And there's some people that are just, I think because our society has softened up a good bit, they don't want to be pushed at all. And if they are going to be pushed some, I've mentioned a couple times because of Dutch Parsons. This was one of the things he related, and I've used it as an illustration a time or two before. But the card that he was issued in basic training, it was a timeout card. For example, if you feel that the military drill instructor is being too hard on you, you can just whip out your card and, you know, I didn't actually see the card, but you can actually whip it out and say, I'm under too much stress. So put me over there in the corner for 30 minutes so I can relax and have a cool down period. Well, that obviously didn't, huh?
What branch of the service was that?
I was thinking it was the Navy. Yeah. Now, they may have done that with the other branches as well, but, you know, I can't imagine that. And I'm sure that Ray's generation can't imagine that either. You know, you're out there in the ship, it's burning or it's coming under attack, and you start waving around your card, you know, I'm under stress. Let's just call off the bullets, you know, for the next couple hours so I can cool down. That's almost unbelievable, whether or not you have any association with the military. And when you think about Christianity, you know, if they're coming after you, those people were just going to wilt on the spot. But, you know, there are some people that did that. They thought, my livelihood is at stake, and I'm not going to be able to get food and so forth, so okay, I'll just cave. But the Lord says, do not do that. I will see you through, but that may end up costing you your life. You know, you're not probably going to skate through it, but it is possible to get through it.
That card thing started because when I was in boot camp, we had a guy get on the line and kill five guys on the firing line because he snapped. So they start really watching people close.
Huh.
And that's why they start doing that kind of stuff, because there's a lot of unstable people that go in the service when they first go in. And that's what happened with ours.
That was on the rifle range, Jim?
Yes? Right.
Somebody just turned around and... Wow.
People have been snapping for a long time.
Interesting. Okay, page 16, 1 Peter chapter 4, 15 and 16, plus Acts 5, Acts 9, and 1 Corinthians 4:12. Who wants to, and you have a minute to get there, 1 Peter 4, 15 and 16, who wants to take it? Steve, 1 Peter 4, 15 and 16, Acts 5, 41. All right, Catherine, Acts 5, 41, Acts 9, 16. Brian, Acts 9, 16, 1 Corinthians 4, verse 12. 1 Corinthians 4, 12, Betty. Okay, let's look at 1 Peter chapter 4, 15 and 16.
Suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God.
Okay, let's fill in the blanks, and again, we'll discuss it for a minute. Peter said, but let none of you, not a single one, suffer as a murderer. You don't want to be a thief. You don't want to be an evildoer, someone involved with making trouble, those kinds of things, or busybody in the matters of other men. Yet, if any man suffer as a Christian, don't be ashamed. So he is affirming that we may suffer. But he said, if you're going to suffer, don't suffer for these reasons. These are poor reasons. These are bad reasons. These are reasons inconsistent with the gospel. Now, when you think about the illustration that Doug gave just a moment ago, you know, you don't want to be the guy that is known for opening up on some fellow soldiers. You know, that's a bad thing. And we can do the same kind of thing. We can be known as someone who's trying to do what's right, someone who's trying to do what's wrong, but let's make sure that we are known for what's doing right, and if we suffer for that, so be it. But that needs to be tied in with the suffering instead of the other. And he says, supply the word or words needed to express the suffering for the disciples from the following scriptures, that is, tell what or why they suffered. I don't think he did as well here as he did in some of the other parts of the material, but we'll look at this anyway. Acts 5:41. Okay, thank you. Suffer for what? Suffer for his name. What are people willing to suffer for today? All right. If a person thinks that they've got to go through some difficult things to improve their situation, to make their life better, many of them will. So that's a good answer. What else?
Family.
All right. You know, maybe a mom and child, maybe a dad trying to work two, maybe three jobs, so he's willing to suffer perhaps some health issues, maybe lack of sleep, so he can care for his family. What else are people willing to suffer for? Well, what about Black Friday? Anybody ever been out on Black Friday and felt like they suffered? You know, you just kind of get trampled and pushed and shoved and, you know, a couple of bangs out there in the parking lot as far as your vehicle. But, you know, people are willing to experience that, some unpleasant stuff, for what reason? They want?
Deals.
All right, they want the deal. They want to save some money. Will people suffer some things? You ever taken any kind of bad drug, bad prescription? And I don't mean bad in the sense that it wasn't helpful. I mean bad in the sense that you think, oh, this is the worst thing on the planet as far as taste. Anybody ever had a concoction that almost made you vomit? Okay, a few of us. But you suffer that, you endure that for improved health. All right, those kinds of things. And here God says, if you suffer for the name, that's a worthwhile thing to endure. Don't look at that in a bad way. It's not going to be a pleasant thing. It's not going to be a fun thing, but it is something that is worthwhile. All right, Acts 9, verse 16. Okay, some of our suffering is going to be great, and again, it's going to be for the name of Christ, you know, the things that are associated with Jesus. 1 Corinthians 4:12.
When we toil, working with our own hands, being reviled, we bless, being persecuted, we endure.
Okay, I just summarize this one as false accusations. Sometimes we're going to suffer as we're trying to do what is right from a false accusation. People are going to say, we're to this, we're to that. We're not enough of this, we're not enough of that, but, you know, God knows the heart, and we're trying to do what's right. So sometimes you just take it on the chin and keep going. Did anybody figure out 1 Thessalonians 3:4 at the top of the next page? I had that ready last week. I looked at it again this week, and I just am not sure what he wanted there. Okay, maybe that's, I put affliction for an answer, but it just, based on the question, that is, tell what or why they suffered. So maybe that was the what they suffered affliction. Okay, 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 10. Let's go through these. What do we have there as far as an answer?
Suffer reproach.
Okay. Anything else?
Because we live in the earth, trust in the living God.
All right, that was the thing that I wanted to emphasize as well. Trust in the living God. And 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 9. Why was the suffering? Okay. You've got evildoers. Paul was trying to preach the gospel, and there were some people that were not so nice. Philippians 4, verse 12. What do we put in there as far as an answer?
Suffer need.
Suffer?
Need.
Okay. All right. I put in there hard times. You know, sometimes those times are going to be difficult. There's a need for that. Hebrews 11, verse 25. Anybody answer that one?
Affliction.
Okay. There. That would be an okay answer. 1 Peter 2, verse 20. All right, suffer for doing well or suffer for doing good. Be patient during those times because, once again, God's going to reward that, but there will be a difficult period. 1 Peter 3, verse 14 is similar. What do we have there? All right, suffer righteousness, do what's right, even though you may be falsely accused for it. Philippians 3, verse 8, suffer so we can know
Christ.
All right, so we can know Christ. Then, final couple paragraphs. Why could Jesus' disciples suffer all these indignities and abuses? The answer is their faith was greater than all their sufferings. Their faith was greater than all their sufferings. And their faith gave them the hope of eternal life in this life to come. Paul described it in this way, for I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not what?
Worthy.
To be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. And then from 2 Timothy 4, verse 8, he says, having fought a good fight, finished the course, I've kept the faith. Paul could say, henceforth, there's laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day. And not to me only, but unto all them that have loved his appearing, those who are willing to suffer. When one can say, thou art with me, pulling from Psalm 23, verse 4, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me, Hebrews 13, 6, his faith will enable him to suffer for his Lord. And how many of us have that kind of faith? That is the mark of someone who is really strong, someone who is really a mature Christian. But if we realize what God offers, then that needs to be what we're shooting for in this life. He then says in bold, the greatest suffering most of us have endured is perhaps having our feelings ruffled by what someone has said. And in many cases, that's true. More times than not, that's more than enough for a person to say, I'm done, I quit, I'm offended, you hurt me, and I'm not going to be back. If you don't know that, go and see some people who've kind of dropped off the map as far as worship. And they will say, well, you know, I had this one experience or somebody didn't talk to me, those kinds of things. Everybody is at a different level spiritually. But I think if people really thought about what they're conveying and what their conviction is as far as why they're not back, and they actually looked at the sufferings in the scripture, they'd be ashamed. They'd look at that and say, boy, you know, I just don't have any basis whatsoever to even say that I'm close to the suffering described in the New Testament. So...